The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
I just saved hundreds of dollars by switching to GEICO. I feel like a whole new person.
Disclaimer, you will not become a whole new person. This is impossible. You might be able to join a gym or diet program, buy a new wardrobe, get hair implants, but your DNA and physical form will remain the same. GEICO waives any and all liability if you attempt to become a new person, except a cyborg. If you choose to become a half-human, half-cybernetic organism with lasers for eyes, the GEICO legal team would be cool with that, because, quote, laser eyes are pretty sweet. Pew, 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 end quote.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup, President Trump's trade chicken with China.
So far, the Chinese government is not flinching.
The National Guard set to beef up the border.
Guard members will be sent to the border soon.
EPA head Scott Pruitt weathering concerns about his future.
Pruitt tried to tamp down the firestorm.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Let's start this weekend in Beijing, where the Chinese are reacting to what appears to be an escalating trade dispute with the U.S. as the Trump administration considers another multi-billion dollar round of tariffs to close a trade deficit with China. Here's correspondent Ben Tracy.
The White House may be hoping it can somehow scare China into making major trade concessions, but so far the Chinese government is not flinching. China's foreign ministry released a statement that says, "We do not want to fight, but we are not afraid to fight a trade war." It went on to say that China will not hesitate to pay any price and will fight back firmly.
China's already targeted a range of U.S. exports for tariffs, including soybeans and aircraft, shaking the stock market. On Friday, the U.S. announced new sanctions against Russia.
These sanctions target seven of Russia's wealthiest men, 12 companies they own, and 17 officials in the Russian government. The administration says the actions aren't in direct response to anything in particular, but to punish Russia for all of its malign activity. That would include Putin's invasion of Crimea, his support for Syria's dictator, his efforts to hack Western computer systems, and attempts to subvert Western democracies.
Stephen Portnoy reporting. National Guard troops are preparing to head to the U.S.-Mexico border to back up customs and border protection officers as the Trump administration aims to up its fight against illegal drugs and immigrants.
The threat is real.
Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen said Guard members will be sent to the border soon.
The Department of Defense and the Department of Homeland Security work together with our governors to deploy the National Guard to our southwest border to assist the Border Patrol.
But she could not say how big the force would be, when they'd be deployed, or for how long.
It will be strong. It will be as many as is needed to fill the gaps that we have today, is what I can tell you.
In a memo, the president called the situation on the U.S.-Mexico border a point of crisis and wrote that the lawlessness that continues at our southern border is fundamentally incompatible with the safety, security, and sovereignty of the American people. The Congressional Hispanic Caucus fired back, calling the president's actions unwarranted and saying they will ultimately undermine our military readiness. Federal law prohibits the U.S. military from acting as law enforcement. They cannot arrest illegal border crossers and can only act in a support capacity. Nielsen said the effort would be similar to a 2006 operation when President George W. Bush sent 6,000 troops to assist Border Patrol. In 2010, President Obama also sent National Guard members to the southern border. Senior administration officials said illegal crossings were at a, quote, staggering high in March, but did not offer specific figures.
The urgency cannot, however, be underscored. It's time to act.
Correspondent Chip Reed reporting from the White House. Questions about the future of embattled EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt. As correspondent Juliana Goldman reports, despite an endorsement of Pruitt by the president Thursday.
I think that Scott has done a fantastic job.
President Trump praised his embattled EPA administrator, but asked if he's bothered by a torrent of negative headlines about Scott Pruitt. Mr. Trump left the door open, saying, "I have to look at them. I'll make that determination. But he's a good man. He's done a terrific job. But I'll take a look at it." Among the stories casting an ethical cloud over Mr. Pruitt, sources tell CBS News that last year Pruitt asked to use lights and sirens to get through routine Washington, D.C. traffic. His lead security agent told him it could only be done in an emergency. 2 weeks later, that agent was reassigned. Pruitt has also come under fire for flying first class at taxpayers' expense. And when Pruitt first came to Washington, he rented an apartment from the wife of an energy lobbyist, Stephen Hart. paying $50 a night.
Sir. Mr. Hard has no clients that has business before this agency.
Appearing on Fox News, Pruitt tried to tamp down the firestorm, but Senate lobbying records show Pruitt's landlord represented several companies with businesses before the EPA when Mr. Pruitt was paying rent.
This is another step in the president's regulatory agenda.
Pruitt's saving grace may be that he's seen by the president and other White House officials as Mr. Trump's most effective cabinet secretary. He started rolling back more than two dozen Obama-era environmental regulations. He also successfully advocated for the president to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord. Another factor working in Pruitt's favor, White House officials say the president doesn't think he can get someone as effective as Pruitt confirmed. That said, the president has been known to praise an official one day and fire them by tweet the next. Juliana Goldman, CBS News, The White House.
Meanwhile, Pruitt is moving forward with the Trump administration's fight against one of former President Obama's signature efforts to combat climate change. He plans to help draft new rules weakening fuel emission standards that would have doubled current requirements by 2025.
We will get this right going forward this year. But it is very right for us to be here to recognize that what was done in 2011 and 12, as we evaluate it now, is not appropriate going forward.
Pruitt's also reexamining a waiver that allows California to impose stricter standards on vehicles. A dozen states follow California's lead. It's a fight that's likely to end up in court. President Trump is not currently a criminal target in the Russia probe, according to sources familiar with Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. However, CBS News justice reporter Paula Reed says it's possible the president could still face charges once the investigation concludes.
There are ongoing negotiations about whether the president will be interviewed as part of that investigation, either in writing by answering some questions or being interviewed in person. But experts tell me there is a little bit of reason to be cautious here, because it's often the case that someone goes into an interview as a subject and comes out a target if they lie to investigators or reveal some sort of incriminating evidence.
On Tuesday, Dutch lawyer Alex van der Zwaan was sentenced to 30 days in prison for lying to investigators in the probe. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg will testify to Congress Tuesday and Wednesday. It comes after the company admits data from 87 million of its users, not the 50 million first reported, may have been accessed by political consultancy firm Cambridge Analytica.
It's clear now that we didn't do enough.
In a rare conference call with reporters, Zuckerberg fell on his sword.
When you're building something like Facebook, there are going to be things that you mess up. And if we'd gotten this right, we would have messed something else up.
But some lawmakers see this as the latest in a series of security blunders that Zuckerberg should answer for in person.
The air needs to be cleared by the CEO.
They want to know why Zuckerberg initially laughed off the notion of foreign meddling back in 2016.
The idea that fake news on Facebook influenced the election in any way, I think, is a pretty crazy idea.
That, he says, was a mistake that has since been fixed. Just this week, Facebook removed more than 270 Russian pages and accounts and restricted apps from accessing certain details about you and your friends. Still, Facebook's stock price has tumbled more than 10% since last month, Morgan Stanley warning that data privacy issues are feeding investor concern.
Still to come, what the future looks like for American troops in Syria. That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The country's top intelligence chief says a decision has been made on the U.S. role in Syria. After the president said he wants out of the country, it's still unclear when that could happen.
President Trump wants to be out of Syria in a matter of months, which goes against military advice he received from Defense Secretary James Mattis and Joint Chiefs Chairman Joseph Dunford. The U.S. military had estimated it would take two more months of fighting to drive ISIS out of the towns it still holds along the Euphrates River Valley, all that's left of the so-called caliphate.
Well over 90% of the caliphate that they controlled, particularly in the north and eastern portions of the country, has been liberated.
But General Joseph Votel, commander of American forces in the Middle East, said offensive operations have now bogged down as U.S.-backed fighters have left the front lines to return to their families. Even if those last pockets of resistance are eventually eliminated, that will not produce what Votel calls a lasting victory over ISIS.
The hard part, I think, is in front of us, and that is stabilizing these areas, consolidating our gains. Of course, there is a military role in this.
President Trump seems determined to leave that military role and the cost of rebuilding to others, in particular Saudi Arabia, but so far without success.
It is very costly for our country, and it helps other countries a hell of a lot more than it helps us.
The U.S. military had always intended to leave Syria once ISIS was defeated, but now it will have to come up with a plan to do it sooner rather than later. David Martin, CBS News, The Pentagon.
The daughter, poisoned along with her father, a former Russian spy in that nerve agent attack in England, is now speaking out.
Yulia Skripal says her strength is growing daily, but the entire episode is somewhat disorienting. The 33-year-old Skripal was poisoned with a nerve agent last month along with her father, a former Russian double agent. In a statement released by London police, she says she woke from her coma a week ago and asked for privacy while she recovers. Britain says Russia's responsible for the attack. Moscow denies it. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
Doctors say her father is improving. Police in California are on defense after being accused of missing warnings about the woman who stormed into YouTube's headquarters near San Francisco and shot and injured three people.
She was very calm, very cooperative.
When police say they found Nassim Agdam at around 1:40 a.m. on Tuesday, she was asleep in her car about 25 miles south of YouTube's headquarters. Mountain View Police Chief Max Bossell says officers contacted Ogden's family.
On the second conversation, we received information that she may be in this area because she had a dispute with YouTube.
Police say there was nothing to suggest that dispute would turn violent. Family members who asked not to be named spoke differently.
The parents warned police, be careful. Maybe she's angry at YouTube because she has this anger for 1 year.
As Ogden continued driving north, police say she stopped at a gun range before arriving at YouTube's campus. That's where officers say she walked through a parking garage and into a courtyard before opening fire with a 9mm handgun she purchased legally.
We know the area of the campus where she entered. We're still determining what security measures she had to navigate through to get to where she was at.
ATF agents in Southern California spent as much as 14 hours searching homes of Ogden's family members for evidence. Ogden's father spoke briefly to reporters.
I'm sorry. I can't believe it.
YouTube says it will be increasing security across all of its offices worldwide. The two women wounded in the shooting here have now been released from the hospital. The third victim, a 36-year-old man, remains in serious condition. John Blackstone, CBS News, San Bruno, California.
Ogden often posted bizarre videos of herself on YouTube. Her family says she was distraught with how YouTube handled her videos. Teachers in Oklahoma say the state's governor needs to set aside more money for education as they continue to flood into the state capitol building. More from correspondent Omar Villafranca.
Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon signed a bill giving teacher support staff, like teacher aides and janitors, a $1,250 raise. Last week, she signed a measure that gave teachers a $6,000 pay raise, but only added an additional $50 million to school funding. Teachers were asking for $200 million more.
Teachers want more, but it's kind of like having a teenage kid that wants a better car.
But true, but their car has been taken away over the last 10 years.
Well, it has been a difficult time, and that's why I'm very proud that this year we were able to get something done for our teachers.
This is drawing a line in the sand for the future of Oklahoma.
Teachers turned into lobbyists, crowding the hallways and waiting in line to meet with almost every state lawmaker.
So do we need to go back to that other hallway and to the very end?
Liz Hoggett and her fellow teachers from the Norman Public Schools went office to office, leaving notes and letters for legislators, asking for more school funding.
Is he going to be able to see us?
They waited more than an hour to meet with their state senator.
Hi, Senator Standridge. Hello. I'm one of your constituents, and I really wanted to talk to you today. We have an appointment at 1:20.
I know, we're going to have to reschedule.
But he had to leave for a roll call. The third-generation teacher says she's frustrated but doesn't plan to give up.
I want him to hear that we are not going anywhere. We're doing this for our kids.
Omar Villafranca, CBS News, Oklahoma City.
As students return from spring break, some college students are coming back with positive experiences after helping low-income kids. Here's correspondent Peter King in Orlando.
Cindy Doe is one of nine Cornell University students mentoring at Tangelo Park Elementary, a school much like the one she attended.
The school district where I grew up in was considered underserved.
This is her third spring break working with students here who have issues similar to her childhood experiences.
That issue is education inequality and the opportunity gap. And I was like, wow, like that's something that I've been exposed to my entire life. And you know what? I really wanted to do something about it. So I want to learn more about it. And I'm going to spend my spring break on this trip.
Principal Christy Ray.
All of our students are 100% free reduced lunch, which means they get free breakfast, free lunch. I'd say about 20% of our population is homeless, lives out of hotels or cars, and 45% of them speak no English, so definitely struggling.
Ray says the alternative spring breakers bond quickly with students, with every bit of positive reinforcement helping to chart their future.
The things they're doing now build the skills that they're going to need later on, and you plant that little seed, and it keeps them as they go through in the tough times.
Being there with them is our favorite hands-on activity, you know. And it's just so amazing. Like, these are what we're all assigned to, like, what, kindergartners, first graders, and these are little kids, but they have big dreams. And that's, like, the best hands-on activity that we could do for spring break, honestly.
Orlando Hotelier and Cornell alumnus Harris Rosen underwrites most of this program. It's one of hundreds of alternative spring break programs that have students helping others instead of partying on the beach. Things like building homes, working in schools, on farms, and healthcare, and helping with animal rescues.
I think that I'm someone who would be quite unhappy in just doing something related to my major and not working with issues that affect the personal lives of people.
For the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Peter King at Tangelo Park Elementary in Orlando.
Up next, looking back on the life and legacy of Martin Luther King.
If it hadn't been for Martin Luther King Jr., I don't know what would have happened to our nation.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
If you like this podcast, check out what other podcasts are available from CBS News Radio.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt.
Climate's changing. We contribute to it. I've said that 1,000 times, okay?
Chairman of the Democratic National Committee, Tom Perez.
That's what this president has always been about. He divides people.
Samantha Bee, our very special guest.
I think I just realized my voice is really boring on podcasts. I'm sorry, everyone.
Not at all. True. Subscribe now for a new podcast every Friday morning. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Folks around the country paused Wednesday evening to mark the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. in Memphis.
The bells tolled 39 times, first in Memphis and across the country, for each year Dr. King lived. In Atlanta, King's three living children marked their father's death with a wreath laying at their parents' crypt. Hundreds gathered at the National Civil Rights Museum to honor his legacy. Underneath the balcony of what was the Lorraine Motel's Room 306, where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was struck down by an assassin's bullet. King's longtime lieutenant, Jesse Jackson, was in the hotel parking lot 50 years ago.
In this tug of war for the soul of America, shall we go forward by hope and healing, or backwards by hurt and hate?
Many flocked to the National King Memorial in Washington, D.C., where crowds paused to mourn and others marched. Civil rights icon John Lewis, who was by Kennedy's side that night, talked about his personal loss.
I lost a friend. I lost a brick brother. I lost my leader. If it hadn't been for Martin Luther King Jr., I don't know what would have happened to our nation.
CBS's James Brown reporting from Memphis. Correspondent Michelle Miller got a rare sit-down with Martin Luther King Jr.'s three surviving children to discuss his death.
It's hard to forget the images, and sometimes I have to catch myself because I get emotional. Martin and I were watching television, and even to this day, when I see a breaking news flash, I have PTSD. And so even though it's been 50 years, it doesn't seem like it. For me, it seems like it was yesterday.
Bernice, what do you remember?
What I do vividly remember is the day of the funeral. So I'm sitting right on the corner here at Ebenezer. I'm in my mother's lap. And so Mom said he couldn't speak to me. but a child kind of knows the dad's voice.
Every now and then I think about my own death, and I think about my own funeral.
And if you look at the film, I'm looking around like, where is he? So I remember that to this day in this sanctuary.
This was to be a peaceful march to City Hall.
68 was a time when your father's popularity was waning.
Mom used to say something like, because his voice is silenced, now he's loved.
What does that mean?
We sort of dumbed down Dad to some degree. He was a doer, not just a dreamer. He talked about what could become, but he left us a blueprint for how that could be manifested.
Leading the march, the Reverend Martin Luther King.
Dad was really radical and revolutionary, and America doesn't understand that yet.
I have to ask this question of you. Did you have to lose your father for the nation and the world to appreciate him the way they do today?
You look at the greater good in terms of the sacrifice, because if he had lived, he may not have been, I'm certain he would not have been as effective. Because he gave his life, he was martyred, and then you remember all of the positive things he left behind.
Correspondent Michelle Miller with Martin Luther King Jr.'s three surviving children, Dexter, Bernice, and Martin Luther King III. Mourners laid flowers and lit candles outside the Johannesburg, South Africa home of Winnie Mandela. She was an anti-apartheid activist and the ex-wife of Nelson Mandela. She died Monday after a long illness at age 81.
Winnie Mandela kept South Africa's anti-apartheid struggle alive and won a huge victory when her husband, Nelson Mandela, was released from prison in 1990 after 27 years.
My husband has been fighting for the liberation of the African people.
When Nelson first met Winnie, she was just 20 years old. He said it was like he was struck by a thunderbolt. They were married for 38 years, together during some of South Africa's darkest days. Nelson went on to become the country's first black president, the father of the nation. She was known as the nation's mother. But she was always a controversial figure, often because of her fiery rhetoric.
We bring up the white man's children. We could have killed them any day we wanted to.
Her reputation was tarnished after a conviction for kidnapping and assault. Her bodyguards killed a 14-year-old boy. She denied any involvement. Her 6-year jail term was reduced to a fine. In 1992, Winnie's marriage to Nelson fell apart, but she was there for important moments. At his 90th birthday celebration, and again when he marked his 20-year release from prison, and finally in 2013 when he was laid to rest. Deborah Patter, CBS News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
The fight for abortion rights is heating up again in Ireland. Voters there will soon vote on an historic abortion referendum. Ireland has some of the strictest abortion laws in the world, forcing thousands of Irish women to travel to England and other countries to end their pregnancies. Correspondent Terry Okita has more from London.
So that's me post my backstreet abortion.
When 74-year-old Anne Rossiter looks at photos of her 19-year-old self, the Ireland native remembers the pain of getting an illegal and unsafe abortion.
The first thing that hits me is that I survived.
From that moment, she vowed to help other women who want to safely terminate their pregnancies. For more than 40 years, Rossiter has opened her London home to more than 100 women, mostly from Ireland. She gives them a room, meals, and a ride to the clinic.
One sees a relief on their face when they come into a house where there are no questions asked.
Abortion is illegal in Ireland, but in May, the country will vote on whether to repeal the Eighth Amendment, which gives unborn children and pregnant women an equal right to life. New legislation could allow unrestricted abortion during the first 12 weeks. Tens of thousands of Irish women have traveled abroad for the procedure, including Gay Edwards.
While I knew that I had come to the right decision for me, it made me feel that society viewed my decision as being somehow wrong.
Others support Ireland's tough anti-abortion law. Vicky Wall says her daughter Leodin was stillborn. She says she remembers the doctor's stark advice.
He said that my only option was to pop to England, insinuating an abortion. That was never going to be an option.
Ireland last voted on abortion back in 1983. Terry Okita, CBS News, London.
Coming up on the weekend roundup, new concerns about a street drug gaining popularity.
This particular problem that's popped up makes them even more dangerous and deadly.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Medical officials in Maryland have a new warning about synthetic cannabinoids. The Maryland Poison Control Center reports the state's first case of a user of synthetic cannabinoids, commonly called K2 or Spice, who experienced bleeding so bad they were hospitalized. Dr. Bruce Anderson is head of the center. Dr. Anderson, what happened?
Well, what we know is that we had a patient that presented to a hospital in central Maryland that had previous use of synthetic cannabinoids and had seen reports in the media about folks in the Chicago area that had been using similar kinds of products and had developed bleeding complications. And this is an individual that developed some bleeding and some bruising, and the individual was concerned enough to go into the emergency department. And during the evaluation in the emergency department, the one of the procedures that's done or one of the things that's done to try and assess whether or not there's a bleeding problem is to check some blood work. Just like anybody that's on Coumadin or Warfarin gets blood work checked. And it turned out this individual had an extraordinarily prolonged blood work measure indicative of a bleeding problem.
When you mean a bleeding problem, is that something that would exacerbate an existing injury or cause some kind of spontaneous bleeding through ulcers or something like that?
Actually, both is probably what can happen and what has happened to the folks in the Chicago area. So if you have an injury, if you get cut, you know, imagine cutting yourself shaving and your blood doesn't want to clot. That's the kind of thing that we're talking about. So except in this case, it could be something that you don't even realize is happening. You know, if you have a some sort of a problem, you know, like an ulcer that you don't know about, and it starts bleeding. It's internal. You don't know that it's going on, except you start to feel really poorly. Just imagine if you're somebody that happens to be female and is experiencing a normal monthly cycle, but your blood isn't clotting, in addition to other spontaneous kinds of bleeds. This is a very serious effect, and there are people that have died as a result.
What does this tell you about these types of drugs?
This is not a drug. It is a drug of abuse, and it's a substance that is inherently dangerous. And the experience that we've been seeing most recently is that there seems to be something that has been added to these products. And we don't know yet if that's what happened with the case in Maryland, but the investigation so far that I've heard about from the Chicago area is that a product like a long-acting anticoagulant has been either adulterated or mixed in with the products that are sold as synthetic cannabinoids, and that's why people are developing these bleeding problems. When you're using the synthetic cannabinoids, you're getting exposed to this rodenticide.
Any idea why it would be added?
Don't know at this point.
And what's your takeaway from this?
Stay away from synthetic cannabinoids. These things are dangerous just by themselves. However, this particular problem that's popped up makes them even more dangerous and deadly. There have been at least two deaths that have been reported so far. This is something not to be trifled with. Don't use these products.
Maryland Poison Control Center Executive Director Dr. Bruce Anderson on the Weekend Roundup. And if you're concerned about the effects of synthetic cannabinoids after using them, you can call the National Poison Control Centers at 1-800-222-1222. An announcement from the country's top doc, Surgeon General Dr. Jerome Adams.
I am issuing the first Surgeon General's advisory in 13 years to bring awareness to and highlight the use of naloxone.
That's the life-saving overdose antidote Dr. Adams wants more Americans to carry. He says it's covered under most insurance plans and by local public health programs. It's also known by its brand name, Narcan. More than 42,000 people died from opioid overdoses in 2016, more than double those who died in 2010. The body of an employee of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has been found in an Atlanta, Georgia river. More from reporter Sabrina Cupid in Atlanta.
Timothy Cunningham's body was found in the Chattahoochee River Tuesday night by two fishermen.
We have nothing that indicates foul play.
Major Michael O'Connor with Atlanta Police telling us,
the river's not that far from his home, although the exact distance I don't know. And we do know that he was a jogger and he was wearing his favorite jogging shoes at the time that he was found. I can't tell you that he was jogging, but those things together seem to indicate that that's a possibility.
He says they may never know how he ended up in the river. At this point, there is no indication of foul play. Sabrina Cupid for CBS News, Atlanta.
The Air Force is remembering a talented F-16 pilot with the Thunderbirds who died in a crash Wednesday in Nevada. CBS News correspondent Vladimir Dutier has more.
They are America's top guns, executing the most extraordinary combat maneuvers in formation. They were performing a routine training exercise at Nellis Air Force Base when one of their own, Major Stephen Del Bagno, was killed. It was the third crash of a Thunderbird jet in the past 2 years, the first death in 35 years. 34-year-old Del Bagno had just become a Red Helmet, flying solo since January. After receiving his wings, he had this to say in a promotional video.
Once you don that red helmet, it means you no longer have your instructor in the back seat. So it's a bit surreal.
To be a part of the Thunderbirds is to be the best of the best.
Mark Rosenkerr is a retired major general in the Air Force Reserves and the former head of the NTSB.
These are no more difficult or no more dangerous than any of the maneuvers that the typical fighter pilots are flying when they are in formation.
Crashes are rare for these highly trained demonstration teams, and fatalities even more so. Since the last deadly crash in 1982, there have been 10 deaths. 3 years ago, we flew with another one of the military's elite squadrons, the Navy's Blue Angels, as Captain Jeff Kuse prepared for an air show.
All right, there we go. Squeeze your legs. Take a deep breath.
He was also killed in a training incident a year later. In a statement, Del Bagno's commander said, "We are mourning the loss of Major Del Bagno. He was an integral part of our team, and our hearts are heavy with his loss." Vladimir Dutit, CBS News, New York.
The team's participation this weekend at a Southern California air show has been canceled. It's unclear how the crash impacts the rest of the team's season. Need something to watch this weekend? How about 2001, A Space Odyssey? The classic Stanley Kubrick film celebrated its 50th anniversary. It premiered right here in Washington. And the Smithsonian National Museum of Air and Space is celebrating the film with special events and exhibits. It's where we talk to some folks.
It was the voyage of a spaceship, and it had a computer that controlled all the activities of the spacecraft.
The computer screwing people over. They were trying to shut him down, and he overrode all the systems.
Computer, he had a pleasant voice.
The strange, poetic nature of it, how technology and mankind's fate kind of melds together.
It was just pretty advanced for the time. It's like I heard a guy say, it's like a Star Trek effect. If you can think it, somebody will eventually conceive how to invent it.
It seems like back then people were dreaming, and I think that translates to today very well.
And what would Hal be dreaming about now? Perhaps Siri. Coming up, shades of pink around Washington.
Big, fluffy, pink, cotton-like almost.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up. It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News.
And good evening. Wall Street today signaled its approval of the tax cuts passed by the Republican-controlled Congress.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. For the first time since 60 Minutes broadcast Anderson Cooper's interview with Stormy Daniels, who claims she had an affair with Donald Trump in 2006, the president spoke about the $130,000 his lawyer paid her just days before the 2016 election. Correspondent Hannah Dobo reports he denied knowing about the payment to reporters on Air Force One Thursday.
Did you know about the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels?
The comments on board Air Force One were the first from President Trump about porn star Stormy Daniels, who claims she was paid hush money to keep from speaking about an alleged sexual encounter in 2006. The White House has denied allegations of any affair. In an interview with 60 Minutes recently, Daniels claimed that she was threatened to keep silent about the relationship when she was confronted by a man she didn't know in a parking lot.
Leave Trump alone, forget the story. And then he leaned around and looked at my daughter and said, a beautiful little girl, it'd be a shame if something happened to her mom. And then he was gone.
Daniels is suing to invalidate a non-disclosure agreement she signed just before the election. Her attorney, Michael Avenatti, believes the president's denial helps his client's case, saying in a statement, "We very much look forward to testing the truthfulness of Mr. Trump's feigned lack of knowledge. It is one thing to deceive the press and quite another to do so under oath." Michael Cohen's lawyer, David Schwartz, has denied the payment was related to the election. Hannah Doba, CBS News.
Job growth stalled a bit, with a jobless rate remaining stable at around 4% for March in the latest report Friday. Here's CBS News senior business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
103,000 new jobs created in March. That is about half of what was expected. And the previous 2 months, January and February, we had revisions which basically amounted to 50,000 fewer jobs than initially reported. Still, this year has actually gotten off to a pretty strong start. We are averaging about 200,000 jobs a month in the first quarter of the year. That is a very good number this far into an economic recovery.
This weekend on 48 Hours, correspondent Peter Van Sant investigates the disappearance of a Tennessee woman in the murder case against her husband. Peter, what happened?
Well, back in June of 2009, Marsha Brantley was a 50-year-old woman, an only child. Her parents were both dead. Relatives lived far away. Her best friend lived in another state. She falls off the face of the earth, and no one reports her missing for 5 long months. Her husband says the reason why he didn't report her missing is that she walked out on him. But there was a problem back at the house for someone who was leaving her husband. She left behind her car, her dogs, her clothes, her jewelry. And it turned out a hairdresser in town in Cleveland, Tennessee, noticed that Marsha wasn't showing up for her hair dyeing appointment every 6 weeks. She tells a local attorney who's sitting in her chair while she's cutting his hair. He goes and talks to the prosecutor's office, and they launch an investigation. The next thing you know, Donnie Brantley is arrested and charged with his wife's murder.
Well, what happened to Marsha?
Nobody knows what happened to Marsha because there's no crime scene. There's no body, no remains, no cause of death, no manner of death. There's no DNA, no blood, no witnesses. And so after Donnie was first arrested in 2013, he was in jail for about 7 months, and the charges were then dismissed. Then he was rearrested when a new prosecutor came in with the same evidence. It's strictly a circumstantial case, and that leads then to a very dramatic conclusion. But needless to say, this is a case of where the defense is basically saying she's out there somewhere. She just walked out of this life, walked out of his life. And she's living under a different name somewhere else. And even one of her friends thinks that one day she'll walk back into the streets of Cleveland, Tennessee and say, well, here's my great novel. She was a writer that I told you I was going to go off and write, and I'm back.
So she might not be dead at all?
That's what the defense argues in this case. And in the course of our hour, Lee Davis, the defense attorney, puts out a very compelling case about this. It turns out, and we learned in our investigation, Marsha Brantley had been seeing a compound pharmacist, they call them, to be treated for problems with menopause. She was suffering from severe depression. And so what the defense thinks she did is took some money, because they claim $100,000 in cash that they kept in a secret place in the house is gone. And she just walked out the door and walked into a new life. That's what they're arguing. The prosecutors say, no way. Her husband had a woman on the side. His business was collapsing. And so it's an intriguing case where you can make the case on both sides. And it leads to a rather startling end, which occurs before our cameras.
48 Hours correspondent Peter Van Sant investigates missing Marsha. You can watch 48 Hours Saturday evenings on CBS TV or stream it anytime on CBS All Access. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
At the Masters, Tiger Woods, once again, a focus.
Here at the Masters this week, much of the focus, rightly or wrongly, has been on one man, the former number one golfer in the world, who at 42 years of age is still the most recognizable name in golf, Tiger Woods. Woods, who is not even close to the golfer he once was, is returning to the Masters after a two-year layoff. He has been plagued in recent years by back problems. There have been surgeries. Just the fact that he is playing here is remarkable. In his first round, Woods had a respectable but by no means a great round. He shot a round of one over par. After that first round, Woods talked about his emotions.
The nerves really were just normal. I wasn't flying high. I wasn't jittery.
Greg Allen is a veteran golf correspondent for the Irish TV and radio network RTE.
Is this anything like the Tiger Woods from 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 2001, when he stepped here to win his fourth consecutive major? I don't think so. I think between the years, there's a lot of miles on the clock.
But he is still Tiger Woods, and whatever he does, it will be closely watched by golf fans around the world. Steve Futterman, CBS News at the Masters in Augusta.
Finally this weekend, the weather in Washington is still far from spring-like, but that didn't keep thousands of cherry blossom trees from showing off their true colors in peak bloom. The annual event draws millions from around the world.
I just like how full and flowered they are, and what's really pretty is them right in front of the monument like this. It makes for a beautiful picture.
They're gorgeous. It looks like popcorn. A little bit like popcorn growing on the trees, pink popcorn.
And I've been trying to come out here for a couple of weeks now just to hit peak season, and I'm so excited to finally see them in full bloom. It's just kind of a magical experience seeing them all. It's indescribable.
Big, fluffy, pink, cotton-like almost.
Gorgeous clouds of white everywhere, kind of floating around you.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Mitchell Fallon is our intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.